bird note. Hear those chicks calling? They're nestlings at a great blue heron colony. During the winter and early spring, herons make their nests out of sticks and twigs high in the treetops. The male heron delivers the supplies, stick by stick, to the nest, as the female arranges things. First, she wedges a strong stick near the main branch of a large fir, spruce, or cottonwood tree to make the core of the nest support. Then she adds other sturdy sticks and branches, delivered by her partner. And finally, she weaves more flexible twigs around the base to lock things in place safely for her young. After she lays her eggs, she and her partner take turns incubating the eggs for 28 days. By the time they're 6 or 7 weeks old, the young begin to test the limits of their nest. If they survive predators like eagles, hawks, or crows, they'll grow to full adult size after 60 days or so. Their wingspan will be up to 6 feet. Ah, music to the heron parents' ears. Healthy, growing fledglings ready to take off. These parents built the perfect childhood home for their young without blueprints, architects, or engineers. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann. BirdNote gives you the sounds of birds every day, and you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at BirdNote Radio.
We know there are significant poor health outcomes from that. What we don't know are the absolute numbers on how many people are getting iller, what the number of years of life lost, for instance, for people in these populations. So, you know, where you guys are in the West, then it's not just about where the wildfires are burning. It's about where the winds are blowing the pollutants, and these can be hundreds of kilometers downstream at the fires, for instance.
And you also write about heat waves and kidney disease. I was unaware of that connection. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, so kidneys can respond in very, very unique ways, I guess, to certain stressors. So if you get electrolyte imbalance, if you become dehydrated, for instance, then kidneys can be damaged. And so when we talk about kidney disease, we're talking about essentially worsening kidney function over time. And sometimes these things can be quite sudden. You know, something can go inside you and you would go into A&E, for instance. But often it's just making these things work in a poorer way. And so a lot of maybe developed countries, you see more kidney disease because of prolonged drought. And, yeah, those sort of things filter through when you get extreme events, but there's a background health change as well.
Are we seeing evidence of these cumulative health impacts in excess death statistics, or how would we know?
In terms of looking at the actual mortality data and long-term exposures, it would be extremely difficult to quantify this. And this is sort of my point in the paper is, you need decades of reliable health data before you would see a signal like this. So the real issue is, if we want to wait for some of that, then we're going to have to wait for more decades, and then we can go back and say, oh yes, all that exposure occurring 30, 40, 50 years ago was having really bad effects. So one of the points of the paper is, if we've got strong physiological evidence for this sort of thing, then we should be including these in our risk assessments already. So one example is, for instance, we know air pollution, if you breathe it in directly through your nose, it can directly impact on your brain. So we know that there's a link between dementia and air pollution. Now, if you were to calculate the number of people who dementia has been progressed more quickly because of this, that number doesn't exist. We don't have the sort of data you would need to calculate that number, which is a problem because it means we can't include it in climate change risk assessments. However, we know that it is a problem because we've seen it in certain case studies, we've seen it in the lab, we've seen it when we've looked at people's brains who've been exposed to these things. So we know it's happening, but we can't quantify it, so it doesn't appear in our assessments, and that's a real problem.
In one of your earlier studies, you looked at wildfire risks in the United Kingdom. Now, I don't usually think of the Jolly Green Land as the spot of wildfires, but what did you find?
No, exactly right. So, I mean, there are thousands of wildfires in the UK every year, actually, but they're not nearly as dramatic as what other countries, especially the LA wildfires or Australia, Turkey, those sort of regions. They're much smaller field fires or moorland fires, but in the case of our study, there was a larger wildfire, and it did start burning buildings on the outskirts of London. So we've got a lot of interest here. So yeah, countries like the UK can have wildfires.